Good morning. Welcome to church this morning. My name is Mary Johnson, and in the pulpit this morning, we have our church board president, Sabrina Truvia. And the title of Sabrina's sermon is, If at First You Don't Succeed. Everyone is invited to stay following the worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, which is right through those doors. And if you're a newcomer here, we extend you a special welcome. And if you'll fill out one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of the hymnal, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. I don't see anyone with small children, but if you had small children with you, they could stay in the service, but we do have a professionally staffed nursery. And the religious education classes for children from pre-K through middle school will begin again in September. And if you'd like to learn more about the church or about Unitarian Universalism, there's an information rack in our fellowship hall where there's pamphlets, newsletters, and other materials you may take with you. And I invite you to turn to your neighbor and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. If you have a short announcement for the good of the church, please come to the microphone.
Good morning. Good morning, can you hear me? For those of you who were not able to go to our first work day in the Kensington Academy neighborhood in North St. Louis, we're having another one August 2nd. It's coming up very, very soon. At 7 in the morning, we'll be done by 11 because it's probably going to be super hot that day. If you're interested in that event, please come and talk to me. You're going to be on your own for food that day. Water and Gatorade will be provided, though. And if you're not sure what I'm talking about, we are partnering with the other two congregations. One isn't participating. First Church St. Louis and Emerson, we're helping out with a couple other municipal groups in the North St. Louis Academy Kensington neighborhood, cleaning up empty lots. So they really need a gas-powered chainsaw that day, so if you have one and you want to use it, please come and talk to me.
You may have seen on the computer already, but we're collecting school supplies again this year. My thought is we could give some supplies to the fourth Saturday kids that come next week. So if you didn't bring anything today, try to get it here before Saturday. But if you don't get it here before Saturday, just go ahead and bring things anyway, because well, I'm going to also take whatever we don't give out that day over to Oasis Center. They can give them to kids that they already have there, or they can save it, because during the year they get kids that, you know, had to leave things behind at their homes. So please bring whatever you can. And there's lots of good sales going on right now. If you watch ads and so forth, I found like folders for 1 cent at Office Depot, and you can get, you know, glue. A lot of times that's limited, like they'll say, you know, limit of 3 or something. So if a lot of us get 3, that'll add up, and you won't have to spend a lot of money, because they're all, and I saw they have backpacks at Walgreens. At Walgreens this week for $2.50, and I paid $5 for them last week, the same ones. So go at it.
I have an announcement, or a couple announcements. On Friday, the church office sent out a transition worship poll developed by Sarah Lazars for the worship associates and ministerial transition teams, and we would very much appreciate your giving serious consideration to the questions posed and getting the questionnaire back at least by the end of July. The poll is to help us communicate with our interim minister, Reverend Sunshine Wolf, as to what we see our needs are and what we value in the congregation. And if you don't have email or would rather fill out a paper survey, the ushers have, well, the ushers don't. I put paper copies right there on the music stand. And anyone who wants to fill out a paper copy, please take that. And I have a container on the desk in the fellowship hall that you can put your survey in. And I suggest you take the survey home and don't fill it out today, but think about the questions asked and your responses to them and return the survey next week. And the paper copies will also be available next Sunday also. And I have a second announcement. The United Congregations of Metro East and the Alton Area Cluster will be having a breakfast next Saturday at College Avenue Presbyterian Church. And you're all invited to attend to learn more about the social justice advocacy activities of the cluster and UCM. And if you're gonna, it's at 9 o'clock at College Avenue Presbyterian. If you're gonna go, please let Pat Moore know. So far we have 4 people from our church attending. If there are no more announcements, I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitudes or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. And there will be time to share concerns or sorrows in a few moments. Well, if there are no gratitudes or celebrations, I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you. May the gratitudes and celebrations among us this day, spoken or unspoken, become a blessing to all. And may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts, a burden shared, become a load lightened. And the prelude begins our worship service as Cole lights our chalice. Call to worship words are by Mae Sarton. Come out of the dark earth here where the minerals glow in their stone cells deeper than seed or birth. Come into the pure air above all heaviness of storm and cloud to this light-possessed atmosphere. Come into, out of, under the earth, the wave, the air. Love, touch us everywhere. With primeval candor, let us worship together. Our first hymn is number 38 in the gray hymnal, Morning Has Broken. Please rise in body and or spirit.
Like the first morning, black.
join in responsive reading number 658, found in the back of the gray hymnal. It's entitled, To Risk. To laugh is to risk appearing the fool. To reach out for another is to risk exposing our true self.
To place our ideas, our dreams, before the crowd is to risk loss.
To love is to risk not being loved in return.
To hope is to risk despair.
To try is to risk failure. Be seated. Freely have we received of gifts that minister to our needs of body and spirit. Gladly we bring to our church and its wider concerns a portion of this bounty. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of this church. The morning's offering will now be given and received. Receive with gratitude all generous gifts of time, talent, and treasure, and together we bless them and those who gave in faith, hope, and love. Amen.
All right, kids, come on down. I have a short item for you. A thing. That's it? That's all the kids? Okay. So, I really didn't know what to talk about today to you all, but also to the big kids, to the grown-ups. But I was reading this book. This is Isabel's book, Shel Silverstein. We were buying one for a friend of ours when we're going to Italy. And I was looking through it and I found this really brief poem. The picture is a kid holding a V. The poem is called Love, and it goes like this. Ricky was ill, but he's home with the flu. Lizzie, our O, had some homework to do. Mitchell E probably got lost on the way. So I'm all of love that could make it today. So sometimes all you got is a V, but whatever little bit helps, right? All right, that wasn't much, something, kind of like the V. All right, you can have this back. Go back to your seats. Thank you.
This is called The Last Aria by the Reverend Liz Lerner, who is the parish minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Silver Springs, Maryland. There is a cricket playing the violin in my bathroom. At least that's how I imagine him. What he is really doing is chirping in the wall behind the radiator. I know that he chirps by rubbing his wings together, and I know that he does this to call a mate. He has no chance of success alone as he is in a wall and a house, but he does not know this, so he keeps on. He has kept on for days now. He must be tired and hungry. Because his effort is futile and heroic in its persistence, because it is for love, or at least love as crickets know it, and no doubt because he is scraping away with his wings like a bow on strings in such lifeless conditions, it has taken on a kind of crazy romance for me, the stuff of opera, the ultimate in doomed love. And for doomed love, really, the only instrument is the violin. I feel he is playing the violin there behind the radiator, and I am sorry for him. I would find him a mate, if I could, and gently release her there where the pipes end and the baseboard begins. If she did not move, I would gently nudge her into him. She would appear a goddess in that wasteland of copper and sheetrock. He would not believe his eyes if crickets can see much in low light. After all his time and effort with the purpose of his song, nearly his death song, all but forgotten, it would be redeemed back into love song at the last moment. This is how I would probably behave all the time if I were God. But I am not, and instead I found him one morning on the floor, unsteady with what I took for fatigue and starvation. He was too weak to jump away from my benign hand. He tried to hide his black body in a white porcelain corner. I took him up and released him outside, where he crawled into the brittle curl of an early fallen leaf and was still. I would like to think he had strength left to forage for food, or perhaps to play one last aria where he might finally be heard. How many times this small world has shown me our own magnified mortality and failed love, loneliness and persistence, ugliness and hope in terrible circumstances, fragility, beauty, strangeness, and impossibility, death and ignominy. Life reborn, saved, smashed, sprayed, elusive, metamorphosed, familiar, unrecognizable. I have great power over small things. I have small power over great things. I pray with thankfulness that I continue to notice these things, that I save what I can and mourn what I cannot. I pray also that I hear always the imperative song of the larger world, so impervious to my vision and efforts. I pray I will not tire of playing my own song out to the world, that I will not give up when it is not heeded, that help will come when I'm tired and alone, and that it might be enough.
Let us continue to pray. Let us open our hearts to our hopes and concerns, to our hurts and joys, and for all things spoken and unspoken that are on our minds here today. Let us bless ourselves and each other. Let the spirit of our faith community guide us in the week ahead. We lift up our blessing and we hold it in our hearts as we quiet our minds in prayer and meditation. Our next hymn is number 123 in the gray hymnal, Spirit of Life. And we'll sing it just one time through. As some of you may know, I recently turned 50, and as I was approaching that milestone, I started reviewing what it is about me that works and what still needs improvement. It was a sort of an outcome-oriented self-assessment of my performance as a human being. I think it went okay. Anyway, one of the things that turns out is working for me is that I seem to have a good bit of perseverance. And this came to me as a surprise initially, as I tend to equate perseverance with patience, which, okay, but I typically have little patience. And because I can recall many instances, especially in my past youth, when I quit almost before I even began things. But then it was explained to me that perseverance has something to do with the fact that in my mature age, I've become more stubborn than a mule. And so it made sense. Stubborn can be good, right? Keeping going in the face of adversity is not a bad thing, except when it is. And I'll talk more on this a little bit later. Now, right now, I'm going to let you in on a bit about my process for coming up and preparing this sermon. Maybe if I tell it like it is, it will help those of you who have some fire in your heart that wants to come out. It may help you see that it's not such an esoteric practice. And it's actually quite simple to come up with a sermon. And if you get inspired and want to fill the pulpit one of these Sundays, see Mary Johnson.
She will hook you up. And besides, even if it's no help to you, I need to get it out there because I need to make a point, right? So here it is, the process. When I volunteered to be in the pulpit today, I thought, great! I always think great when I'm going to be in the pulpit. Anyway, I thought, great, you know what? I can talk about perseverance. What a potentially uplifting topic for my sermon. I thought I had it all planned out. Essentially, what I wanted to do was retell the story of Horton Hatches the Egg. Remember how it goes? Horton gets roped into tending to an egg that Maisie, the lazy, impatient bird, no longer wants to care for because she wants to fly to Palm Beach. I'm just saying. And Horton cares for the egg through thick and thin, even though he loses his other friends and gets captured and sold to the circus. And all the while, he's chanting his mantra, I meant what I said, and I said what I meant, an elephant's faithful 100%. And of course, Horton ends up being rewarded. Because when the egg hatches, he sees that he made an elephant bird, a creature that looks like him, but with wings. His outcome was shaped by his perseverance. I really wanted to show something like that. Patience rewarded through the lens of my experience with everyday relatable tales of my overcoming adversity. Even the title, the little blurb in the newsletter and in church this week has this cheerful, optimistic little engine that could undertone. I really thought I could pull it off. But somehow, all uplifting all the time is not quite what I have for you today. I don't exactly remember what day it was when I volunteered to be one of the summer preachers. Though I must admit that right now it feels like it was a lifetime ago. And today seemed so far away when I said yes to this, that it was another lifetime ago. And that is maybe because in the last 3 or 4 months, my life has taken me to the verge of mental and commitment overload. Of course, amid the stress in these past months, there have been some great days, excellent surprises, and some awesome times. But I just finished teaching a very demanding summer class where I essentially had to shepherd 13 chemistry majors through quadratic equation and other unpleasantries, a class I did not remember how to teach, and I had to remember how to teach it on the fly because it was a short 8 weeks. And I still work my other job, my full-time job, as well as the teaching job, and I had other commitments outside of work, both at church and not at church. And I'm still, last I checked, a parent, a partner, a friend, and a kid to elderly parents. And I tried to keep balance the best I could, but I can tell you right now that, frankly, I've been running on empty for a bit. Look, I know I am lucky to lead such a full life. The reason I'm even bringing all this up is not that I want to complain, not at all, but I wanted to give a context to my confusion, my reluctance over the course of months to even put pen to paper and start a sermon on perseverance. Because, yes, I did make it somehow through this forest of stress in the past 4 months on account of my stubbornness, but I feel tired, cranky, confused, impatient, and as I mentioned, empty. Also, I have a lingering feeling that had I done less, I could have done it better. So, persevering and spreading myself too thin hasn't worked well lately. And on top of that,
what happened is that I couldn't even bring myself to be spiritually excited about talking to all you all today. And none of my efforts seemed to matter. None of my recent experiences with perseverance were entirely uplifting, because sometimes you persevere, but the outcome is still unwanted. Nothing seemed to guide me, and this went on a long time. Pretty soon, it wasn't just that I couldn't do a sermon on perseverance. I just had nothing to say on anything. So I avoided even thinking that I had a sermon to write. But I'm rarely away from thinking of spiritual matters, and the fact that I was forcing myself to not think of these things because I felt empty and pointless was bugging me a whole lot, like a whole lot. So during this time of busy confusion, one day we were driving home, I think from church or campus or somewhere, and Ed tells me, "Well, why don't you look at perseverance on its own merits, like away from the outcome?" Well, we just about got into a fight. You see, I could not see the merit of persevering outside of a wanted outcome. I could only seem to understand perseverance under the lens of a positive reward. Like Horton, who gets an elephant bird at the end. I wanted my elephant bird, too. Why? Well, because if you strip perseverance of outcome, you will see that it is tedious, repetitive, mind-numbing, and by definition, long. Which incidentally is why I chose to not read Horton Hatches the Egg for the Children's Moment. It's long. It's a long book. It goes on. Anyway. Well, it takes a long time to learn to play the violin, and what if you get lost on the way to Carnegie Hall? Of course, even if you include outcome, there is a chance that persevering will not give you the results that you expect, and then what? My favorite writer, the late David Foster Wallace, addresses tedium in his unfinished novel, The Pale King. The story is set in Peoria in the 80s in an IRS office. Wallace is able not only to describe tedium, but to make you feel its heft. Tedium in this book is viewed as a spiritual call. My favorite part is a speech made by this accounting professor before the advanced accounting exam that one of the characters in the book ends up taking by mistake, and which eventually brings him to the IRS office and makes him become one of the characters in the book. Here it is. "Gentlemen, here's a truth. Enduring tedium over real time in a confined space is what real courage is. True heroism is minutes, hours, weeks, year upon year of the quiet, precise, judicious exercise of probity and care with no one there to see and cheer." Okay? Well, that is the definition of perseverance stripped of outcome. When does that happen? Does it only happen in the mind of late brilliant writers? As I continued to think about giving up the outcome and persevering, things started to surface. A few were no help at all. For instance, I started reflecting on how outcome-less perseverance is closer to sounding like the definition of insanity, like doing the same thing over and over, hoping for a different outcome. But then I got over that because I realized that's kind of pointless reasoning. And then I realized that there are two ways one can remove the results and still persevere. One is by living in the present moment. The reason tedium is tedious is because we're not there when we're doing stuff. Either we're hoping to be done with it, or we're not paying attention to it at all. We're not really there when we're chopping wood and carrying water, as the Zen masters say. However, if you are able to be present to the task at hand, it doesn't matter what the outcome is going to be. Okay, let's see a show of hands. How many here are able to live in the present moment all the time? Yeah, me neither. It is an admirable aspiration to remove distractions and to be able to keep going. I am, however, not entirely satisfied with having to be the sort of Zen superhero who keeps going in the face of adversity with a clear, empty mind, all chopping wood and carrying water in order to understand perseverance. That's not me. I have this plant at home. The species of plant is called plumeria, and it is a tropical plant, native to Polynesia, Hawaii, the Cook Islands, that region over there. It is used in Hawaii. That's the flower you make leis out of. The flowers have an intoxicating scent because pollination occurs at night by moths. I love the scent. I love this plant. My mom brought me a piece of it from my hometown of Palermo, Sicily, where the variety Plumeria alba, the white kind, is common, having arrived likely through the adventures of a local who long ago visited Polynesia. It's very popular. And this specific plant that I have a piece of was propagated from a plant that originated in my grandfather's home. We had to fight the new occupants of my grandfather's house to get it about 15 years ago. And through the intercession of a neighbor, we were able to get a piece, which in turn became a big plant in its own right in my mother's garden. 6 years ago, when the plant arrived here, it had trouble growing. Every year after that, it would yield a leaf or two leaves, but it never had enough oomph to flower. Last year, I even asked a gardening-inclined uncle of mine back home, and he declared, "Nope, it will never flower. If it hasn't yet, that's it, only leaves." These are two flowers that come from my plant, and they smell great. They're a little wilted because they had to trek from Edwardsville. Maybe at the end of the service, you can come and have a scent, those of you who can. There they are. After 6 years of seemingly pointless toiling, our plant felt comfortable enough to produce flowers. And there's still more buds on the plant. This is not just it. These are just the second and third flower that it's produced. The first one is at home. Love grew this plant from my grandpa's house to mine through many difficult moments. So here's the thing. The second way that it is possible to persevere without being outcome-oriented is because of love. Suddenly, framed like this, perseverance no longer feels tedious, frustrating, or even pointless. I can persevere because I love to teach, because I love my child, my spouse, or my friend, because I love this church. I can endure tedium over time and in a confined space, doing something I don't especially relish, expecting nothing in return because of love. Think about it. When we love someone, we want good things for them, and we're prepared to endure anything for them for any length of time. This is because love is a powerful force and an outcome-free motivator. And the thing is, love helps us persevere, but we do it not because perseverance is a virtue, but because love, which is always the answer, makes everything, including tedium, meaningful. So many 8B. Our last hymn is number 108, My Life Flows On in Endless Song, from the Gray Hymnal. Please rise if you're willing and able. Benediction from Frederick E. Gillis. May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us, among us, now and always. Amen. Go in peace.